So if you could do one person in the Star Wars universe, who would it be?
Han Solo.
Han Solo.
Han Solo.
Fuck, Han Solo.
Welcome to Pod Thingy, where the geeks meet over drinks to discuss the latest in pop culture. Join the rock star, the author, the outlaw, and the nerd girl for Pod Thingy.
And we're back. You're in episode 7 of Pod Thingy, a tribute to episode 7, the upcoming episode. See, I normally would be the person to be like, guys, we can't use music, but that was so horrible that no one would recognize it. It was supposed to be the Star Wars theme. We're doing a Star Wars centered podcast today. So it's all Star Wars all the time, except for the new stuff up front, but we'll get around to the Star Wars stuff soon. I am John Mulhall, and I am the author of Getty's Moon and the upcoming Dark and Broken Things. You can find me at johnmulhall.com. I'm here with
Geek Outlaw, a.k.a. Hayden, at geekoutlaw.com. Do the Wild Wild podcast. Check it out if you have time in your busy schedule.
And I'm Tracy, also known as Hot Nerd Girl. Hotnerdgirl.com, Facebook.com/hotnerdgirl, Pinterest.com/hotnerdgirl, Twitter.com/hotnerdgirl.
She just became a robot.
Wow. And did the robot. And I am Blaine, vocalist for Idiot Stare, Insight 23, and Nickelback.
You are such a douche. You're a
busy man. Hey, haters be hating.
That's a new term.
Did you say Hayden's be Hayden?
Because... theme of the show.
That's even better.
Hayden's be Hayden.
I am now indispensable, people, no matter how bad I suck.
It's true. We can never get rid of him.
God damn it. I'm here forever.
You're really bad at sucking.
Hayden's be
that's a t-shirt.
I want it.
You're listening to Pod Thingy. We're a bunch of geeks that sit around while we're drinking alcohol and we talk about crap. That's pretty much the gist of the
awesome, the awesome crap.
Good crap.
Awesome crap.
Well, you know, it's awesome. Whatever.
Solid crap.
Look,
not
even the bad
kind.
Crap is kind of awesome crap.
Yeah. Look, I'm no apologies. We talk about crap.
That's right.
So if you want to reach us, if you want to tell us how badly we suck or how wonderful we're doing or send inappropriate pictures or limericks or sonnets or...
videos.
Yeah, videos of some sort.
Dick pics.
Dick pics for Tracy?
What's a dick turd?
That's a segment. Dick pics for Tracy.
Dick turd.
Dick turd.
What's a dick turd?
What's a dick turd?
So we are at geeks@podthingy.com and send us whatever. Just say hi. So we'd love to hear from you. We have...
Drink of the day is...
Oh, right. Thank you. I always forget that. Thank you for keeping me honest. The drink of the day is Corellian whiskey.
That's right.
Themed to the show. And I think it's time for us to take a drink of our Corellian.
We were actually able to import or export. Yeah. Import, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Straight from the Hubble.
That's right.
And here we go. Here we go. So,
cheers.
That's
good.
Smoky.
It's a nice little chewy.
It's a little wiki-ish. Yeah.
Mine's got a hair in it.
God damn it. You beat me to it.
No. Before we get to all the Star Wars stuff, I wanted to talk a little bit about something I've been wanting to talk about for a couple of weeks, and we've had our shows have been a little too packed. Is that the Muppets came out. The Muppets had another movie that came out and is gone already, and it tanked.
Waka waka.
And it was called The Muppets Most Wanted. And the first preview I saw to it was very fun looking. And I was like, this is great. I can't wait to see this. The next thing I heard about it was the Muppets movie is already out of theaters.
Nobody wanted it.
What the fuck happened to the Muppets movie?
Well, that's, you can't really say that nobody wanted it because like the Muppet movie, when it got rebooted or whatever it was, which was actually, I mean, a sequel.
By Jason Segel.
And it was brilliant. And it was all because of forgetting Sarah Marshall.
And the puppets.
And then the puppets with the Dracula musical, which was fantastic. Like, it breathed new life into the Muppets. And that first one was genius.
It was everybody, awesome. Yeah, it was genius. Oh, it was great. It was an excellent movie.
Now,
I would just fall short of calling it genius, but I would say I loved it. You know, I would put it up
second to the original Muppet movie.
I would put it up high.
It relaunched the franchise in an excellent way.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they did it in such a self-deprecating way.
Exactly.
That it made so much sense.
So what the hell went wrong with the sequel? Because
I don't know, because the sequel's great.
Okay, you're the only one of us that saw it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tell us about it.
When I saw the trailer, I immediately thought, this kind of sucks because they've gone off on the way of, like, you know, Muppets Take Manhattan. You know, it's like this crazy story.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like that. And then maybe it was a trailer that put people off, which can... Why did you just do that? That was like gross in my ear.
Go on.
It's like you wanted to hear how it tasted on your lips. All right. So
now that was gross.
So, but it wasn't like that. Like, the movie picks up the very second the second one leaves off.
The
first one leaves off, sorry. Yeah. It picks up in the middle of Hollywood Boulevard, you know, right where, and they're like, this is great, oh my God, everyone loves us again. And it starts right from there.
Yeah.
And then it just turns into this, you know, spy espionage, you know, story that, to be honest with you, was awesome. I thought it was great. And Tina Fey is so goddamn funny, and I'm a fan of hers anyway. Yeah. I love her so much.
Me too.
And when I saw her in the trailer, I actually thought she was pandering to a sort of a dumb character.
Yeah.
Again, I think the trailer maybe put a lot of people off.
I like the trailer. I like the trailer a lot. And
but what I mean is, like, the movie was so much more awesome than the trailer even could have possibly.
The thing from, you know, I look at it and go, this is a massive failure of marketing.
Yeah.
Because, yes.
Agreed.
Because you have a franchise that people are excited about again, you know, that they're reinvigorated by, and you've got the first trailer comes out, and from what I heard, everyone was very positive about that first trailer. I didn't hear a lot of negative about that first trailer.
I was positive on it.
I didn't hear a lot of people bagging on it. I heard a lot of people saying, this is cool. This looks interesting. This looks fun. And look, it's like Ty Burrell's involved, and, you know, what up, Tina Fey? This is cool. And then nothing. I heard nothing about it. It was never like, the Muppets are coming out this week. Go see the Muppets. This is happening. You know, there was no tie-ins on television shows. I didn't see shit.
No, I totally agree. And I think, dude, like, Animal must have slept with some producer's wife because somebody got pissed
that is
off.
So fucking typical of Animal.
I don't know. That's the Animal. Thing.
They were just trying to make it ride the coattails of the first movie and hoping that people would come out. Is that what happened?
Well, I have a bit of a theory. And I'm a Muppets guy back from the original Muppets.
Me too.
The series. And you didn't like Muppet Babies, but I did.
Fuck Muppet Babies.
I love them. So my theory is that, going back even to this whole Spider-Man discussion about too soon, I feel like the Muppets is kind of one of those properties that maybe doesn't need a movie every 2 years. Like, it was almost nostalgic in a sense that the first one came back after so many years of being away.
I disagree with that.
You don't think so?
Yeah, no, I feel like the Muppets is kind of evergreen, if that makes sense. I mean, I don't feel...
Not easy being evergreen.
Yeah. I want to drink to that by myself in our green cups, by the way.
Well done, good sir.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, why not?
Cheers.
No, but truthfully,
rainbows.
Rainbows. But truthfully, I don't think that people were like, oh, I'm over the Muppets already. I
don't know. I don't mean it in your face kind of way. I almost mean it in a sense that it's like everyone. When was the last time the Muppets movie came out? Before this, the first one with Seagal. Yeah.
Well, no, it's been...
that would be a very... Let's just stop for a second and examine what kind of movie that would be.
Yeah.
Steven Seagal
in
The Muppets.
That would be funny. I would see that.
No. Oh, I don't go see Steven Seagal movies. I would not see All right, a well, Muppets scene.
When was the last time the Muppets had a movie before that film?
Wasn't that like Muppets in Space? Which was a reach back. They tried to
'90s. I want to say late '90s.
Muppets in Space might have been the last one. I don't
think
follow.
It was. And that was
the
Gonzo
one.
Yeah,
I'm just talking about. You're talking about a good 10 plus years, and almost there's a swelling like almost like Muppets great, and you've got some great actors coming into it, and then all of a sudden 2 years later you got another Muppets.
But here's the thing: they really took with the first Muppets, in my opinion, they took a property that was stagnant.
Yes,
and they
dying.
Breathed the new life into it, mm-hmm. and if you would. And you've seen it. You said the second Muppets was good, too.
I loved it. I really did.
There's no reason why you can't have a Muppet movie every couple of years.
I don't disagree.
No, and the marketing, the like billboards and stuff was genius. It looked like, I mean, you know,
And you think Tina Fey is a bigger draw? Even she's pretty popular. No,
she is. I mean, yeah. they didn't. You know, like any Muppet movie, they don't put a star ahead of the Muppets.
Of the Muppets. Because the Muppets are the stars.
There's always great cameo. Lady Gaga's in the. I mean, there's a cameo Lady Gaga in it. I mean, the cameos are incredible. But it was right in line with the first movie. I mean, except that it had the espionage, the spy thing, which I thought I was not going to like, but I loved it.
Do you remember the timing? Do we know what was up against this? Maybe it was a timing issue with other movie releases.
I'm going to stick to my guns and say this was a marketing fail.
Because I agree.
I was waiting for this movie to come out. I saw the first trailer. They did what they needed to do for me. I saw the first trailer and went, I want to see this. This looks good. This looks fun. I'm in. And then the next time I heard about it was like an article talking about how the Muppets
on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Well, it's like you can't, for somebody who's your audience who's saying, I'm in. I'm raising my hand. I'm saying I'm in. And to never hear about it coming out, mm-hmm. that's a fail. Yeah. That's a fail.
I mean, I work right down the street from the El Capitan, so it was obviously in my face every day. But I agree.
Which is probably why you saw it.
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, I saw it because I'm a Muppet fan.
No, I understand I'm a Muppet fan, and I didn't know it was coming out. So the fact that it was in your face every day is probably the only reason you saw it.
I knew about it. I mean, this is Disney, though. Disney owns the Muppets.
I get it.
So Disney usually
owns Marvel too.
Yeah, but Disney doesn't usually fail on its marketing, which is odd.
Yeah, I blame the marketing on this.
I agree. I totally agree.
And I'm dissatisfied by it because, you know,
and I will say see it on video. It's fun.
I'm going to. Yeah,
I want to see it. I want to see it.
It's silly, of course.
Well, but it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be. Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, the thing that bothers me about this is that they're going to see that as people don't care.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think people care. I think people want to see good movies, and they like the Muppets. They love the Muppets. They're endeared to the Muppets.
I don't want the Muppets to ever go away.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah.
Then they shouldn't. No. Never.
You know, we're talking about properties that get rebooted after a couple of years, you know, 10 years on Muppets in Space. Let's talk about a property that's been stagnant for
60 years.
The last time that I can recall a movie coming out was in the 80s with a Flash Gordon soundtrack. And
Flash!
He's the ruler of the universe.
Yeah. He rules every one of us.
Really does.
He really does.
Flash Gordon. And they're rebooting it. And I think, all right.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I am too.
Until you mentioned it. For some reason, it was not on my radar.
I don't think it's on a lot of people's radar, but I think it's one of those rare properties that could really be interesting.
I'm shocked that it hasn't happened before. I mean, Yeah.
Well, especially since, you know, in most of the Star Wars marketing and the documentaries and whatnot, they will definitely give their due to Flash Gordon, the serials of the olden days.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, right down to Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It all comes down to the serials of, like, well, the early serials of Flash Gordon and even Batman and Robin and
Star Trek Voyager basically carbon copied it in the holodeck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got a great property to mine, and I'm shocked that no one's mined it since the 80s.
Well, it probably has a lot to do with Ted. Too.
You think so?
Not in a sense that Ted brought great attention back to Flash Gordon, where everyone went, "Oh shit, we should do that." But I do think somebody went, "Oh, I've never even heard of that. I'll look it up." I really do.
Really,
it's back in the consciousness of
But
you may be right, and if you're right, that's kind of disheartening for me, because if you have to watch a movie about a teddy bear to find out that one of the greatest serials of all time.
I mean, I don't think that's the first time it's happened.
I just think it's very interesting that you basically have the inspiration, the impetus for Star Wars, one of the greatest franchises of all time, one of the most money-making franchises of all time, and it's sitting on a shelf ready to be remade, and why not reboot it? It feels like it shocks me that it hasn't been done before.
No, I mean, me as well. I mean, but as an example we just used, you know, Forgetting Sarah Marshall is the reason that the new Muppets got made.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Ted is the reason why they're going to, you know, breathe new life into Flash Gordon.
So, I mean, is this something you guys are excited about? You know,
I'm interested.
I'm interested.
Intrigued.
Yeah. Intrigued, yeah.
I mean, I'll miss the Queen soundtrack.
Well, but that was a very specific iteration
exactly.
of Flash.
Like,
you know?
I mean, it's sort of like, I mean, Flash Gordon, okay, Clash of the Titans came out pretty close around that time as the original, like, Flash Gordon, you know, give or take a couple years.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, both of those were so campy and so weird. And Clash of the Titans, I absolutely hated. Flash Gordon, I loved.
You hated the old Flash, Clash of the Titans,
hated
the 80s?
It. Absolutely.
So much better
hated
than
it.
The new one, the Harry Hamlin see, one?
I love the old Clash of the Titans.
I hate it only because of that fucking owl with a clock. That's the reason why I hate
Who?
It.
Who? Was it Bebo?
Whatever.
Who?
Fucking hated that thing. I loved the Harryhausen. I loved, well, and also.
It's got Calibos.
Harry Hamlin.
I know, but you know what? For every argument that you'd make against that movie, I would just have one word, and that's Calibos.
Okay.
We have like a Laurence Olivier and Maggie Smith and the gods were great.
I know.
And Calibos.
Okay, Calibos. You got me there. But like,
there's this great scene that when he sees the Perseus's feet in the sand, and he sneers, and it's one of the most awful, ludicrous villain sneers of all time. And if you freeze on that, it would haunt your dreams. I love it. It's Calibos.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Well, here's a question. Would you rather see Flash Gordon or Flash on the big screen first?
No, I'd rather see Flash Gordon in a million years. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Clash of the Titans is when I was like, screw that. When that got rebooted, I'm like, I don't have any interest in seeing that. But Flash Gordon, I would.
Don't you think that Clash of the Titans as a reboot, man, that went wrong.
That went wrong.
Way wrong.
If that would that's one that if like you would have came to me and said, "Holy crap, dude, you got to see this movie," I would have gone in a second.
Right. Right. Yeah. But it could have been so much more, and it just wasn't. I mean, they took everything that was good about that original movie and tossed it and kept all the crap. Yeah. And
damn crap.
Yeah. It's just they had such an opportunity there, and I feel like they have an opportunity with Flash Gordon as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep it campy,
yeah, you want it campy?
Okay, that's
yeah.
a great question.
Yeah.
Do we want it? Well, because the first one was campy. I don't think they'll go campy. With
I don't
it.
Think they will either.
I don't know.
I think it's going
to
be
a good movie. With odes to the camp.
It's got to have some camp.
I'll bet you $1 million it's not camp.
If it's not, I don't think it's going to be as a success.
$1 million.
It's got to have some camp.
I don't think it will.
Knowing
Hollywood, I don't think it will.
So as we all know.
Depends who directs.
Yeah, well, it depends on a lot of factors.
Think about it. Flash Gordon, the serial, wasn't campy.
No. Well, it was campy for its age.
Well,
but
its time.
No, we called it campy later.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
But it was a fantastic. It was fantastic.
Oh, it was great. It was so good. I think that's one of the things I thank my stepdad for.
Yeah.
Like seeing those in old 16mm, you know.
Yeah, and the Batman stuff. And, yeah.
Pay homage is a better term.
Yeah. I don't know if it'll end up being as campy as the 80s version because that was pretty
Because
campy.
That's the thing. I would assume that if somebody's going to remake Flash Gordon, are they remaking the serial? They're remaking the campy Flash Gordon movie of the 80s.
I think they would be remaking the serial.
That's what I think.
You know, it's
right.
There's a lot.
So
of,
it's not going to be campy.
I don't think so.
I think they'll do a
proper
you know,
justice.
I hope so. I mean,
wouldn't call it proper.
Look, they you're talking about what is an effect to space opera. We talked about this last podcast a little bit. I think that you have an opportunity here for a tremendous property that can be mined by the right studio and you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, and that doesn't mean it will be fantastic, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously we've brought this up before, and I'll bring it up again, you know, and it's a nice segue into our episode, is that Flash Gordon was a huge inspiration for George Lucas. And some people know this, and some people don't, but before he started writing Star Wars, he tried to license Flash Gordon. He wanted to do Flash Gordon. So when you see Star Wars, that's really George Lucas's version mm-hmm. of a Flash Gordon. And obviously, you know, we've gone a long way with Star Wars. We can there's a lot of different things we could talk about with Star Wars, but
and we will.
And and we will. But this is our episode 7, and we're going to talk about episode 7. God, I love that you guys suck.
Yeah, you were way closer to the mic than we were.
Yeah. Let's take another shot of Carillion whiskey before we get started with our Star Wars.
You Carillion bastard.
Cheers, all.
Cheers, all. Cheers. There we go.
That's good stuff.
So let's talk about episode 7. You know, take your memory back a few, I guess it's only a few months at this point, really. Honestly, it hasn't even been a year, right, since they announced that George Lucas sold Star Wars, that there's going to be an episode 7. How did you feel about that?
Billions of millions.
Billions, a half of which he donated to
charity.
Yeah, to charity. He did. You know.
Well, of course, because he
doesn't need it.
He's worth trillions. Yeah.
And it's a better tax write-off.
Yeah.
So tell me how you felt about that announcement, that there's going to be a Star Wars episode 7.
Much with any reboots or remakes, a lot of it, and I think we've gotten into this in past podcasts, is reintroducing properties to new generations. And Star Wars is one of those ones where, I mean, you could do it on video or you can kind of go back to the fodder and introduce. If there's a story to tell, my feeling is you do it. I don't know. And I was okay with it. I was okay with him selling it, saying, if you can carry this on, I'm done with it. Do it better than at least the first three prequels.
Tracy?
I was okay with Disney buying it. I think that they have shown us with the Marvel Cinema Universe that they can put it in the hands of good people and let them take control and not meddle too much. So I think that in that respect, it's going to be fine. I think that J.J. Abrams was a great person to hand the reins to. I'm kind of bummed he's not coming back for Star Trek, because since I'm born and bred Trekkie. But I think that he is
especially
very...
because he made your franchise cool.
It was always again cool. Blaine. Anyway,
that's topic for another day.
I think that he is very much aware of how much pressure is on him, and he really, really, really wants to make this good, and he wants to make it not a disappointment like the prequels were. So I think he's taking the responsibility very seriously. And so I'm actually really excited to see what he does with it.
I love actually listening to the two of you talk about it, because, you know, you are the voice of optimism and you are the voice of reason. You know, when it comes to this, and I mean, I'm not going to pretend like Star Wars is more important to me than anybody else on the planet, but it's one of the most important things in the world to me. And it's when the news broke, it didn't even hit me like, how do I feel about Disney, or how do I feel about J.J. Abrams, or how do I feel about any of it? It just immediately put me on a fence. And that fence was just fuck me over or don't fuck me over, you know? And that's where that's where I rest. Like I want so bad to be excited about this. Like there is nothing in the world that should make me more excited than this. And yet I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
God, you made me cry really a little
emotional.
Bit.
Seriously.
I was shedding a tear.
But I echo that, because I mean, you know what, you've heard me talk about this before, and I've written a paper about it, Star Wars put me on a path that I'm on.
Yeah,
you know, it changed my life as a child and put me on a path that. So I can't, you know, I can't think of Star Wars without getting a little emotional about it. And like you, I feel like I should be one of those people that's out on the front lines, you know, being the most excited about this. And I can't be. I haven't gotten there yet. It's kind of one of those things where you go, I love you so much and you've hurt me so much, you know? And I know it becomes a cliche where you go, oh, Star Wars raped my childhood. And it's like, you know what? Star Wars didn't rape my childhood. Star Wars made my childhood awesome.
Oh, yeah.
It made me a different person. Mm-hmm. But you get to a certain point and you go, you don't care about the stories as much as I do. And until I see with my own eyes that you care about these stories as much as I care about them, then I can't get excited about this because it's just setting myself up for more hurt. And I know that sounds over dramatic, maybe.
Yeah, well.
But
and we've gone through a lot of this together.
I know, but it's absolutely the truth. And so I maintain my involvement in the news about this. I listen to the factoids that are coming out.
Oh yeah, I follow this rabidly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
my emotions, those raw emotions, are not exposed. The nerves are not exposed.
Not yet.
On this.
Not yet.
So until I see some real hard evidence that this is about,
and they keep giving us peaks, they keep giving us little ones. You know, for instance, the poster. You know, the poster art is going to be done
by Drew Struzan,
and that's. I mean, there's lots of amazing
news. For those of you listening who don't know Drew Struzan, Drew is one of the preeminent poster artists of our generation, and he, you know, for me, as someone who came up, I was born in the early 70s, I came up through the 80s, Drew Struzan's art has more effect on me than...
If you've ever been to Johnny's house.
Yeah, that's true. It's there's you know, his art is more prevalent than a Picasso or a
Renoir.
You
know it immediately.
Yeah, yep. And it's he, and I have a great, and maybe we'll get to it this podcast. I have a great Drew Struzan. I met Drew Struzan, and I didn't know I was meeting him. And
tell it.
You want me to tell the
story? Tell it.
Okay. So I was, the reason I don't tell this story a lot is because there's a lot of name dropping involved, and I'm not a name dropper. But I kind of have to drop a lot of names to kind of give you a context.
Drop those
for this.
Names.
Drop them.
Drop
like
them.
It's hot.
Like it's hot.
Drop them like it's hot.
What? So I went with a friend of mine who was friends with Frank Darabont to see the a screening of Pan's Labyrinth at his personal screening room on the Warner Brothers lot. And there were celebrities all over the place. I mean, Guillermo del Toro was there for his movie, and he announced it. I sat next to Jeff Goldblum, which is a story by itself, by the way, because Jeff Goldblum is an interesting man.
I've met him.
Chaos theory.
I'm going to take a little detour.
Dude.
Follow me along here. I was like, hey, I'm sitting next to Jeff Goldblum. I was like, I'm a huge fan of this guy. I love The Fly. I love Jurassic Park. This is an awesome, you know, this is cool. He was in Silverado, for fuck's sake. And so I'm sitting next to Jeff Goldblum. You know, okay, let me stop for a second. Do you know how it is when you go to a movie with a 6-year-old or 7-year-old, and they don't have the vocabulary to tell you, you know, I really liked that movie because of the way it made me feel. Yeah. I really liked that movie because of the character development or the plot. There's no language there yet to tell you why they appreciated a film. So what they will do is just say, let me tell you the scenes. They will reenact the scenes for you. And that's okay, because you realize this is just them being excited and telling you how the movie was for them. That's Jeff Goldblum. So we're done watching this movie. And because it's a screening room, you know, it's not like everyone gets up and goes out to the concession stand. There's nowhere to go. This is a screening room. You've been invited. So we stand up, and Jeff Goldblum turns to me and my friend, and he starts talking about the movie. And he goes, I couldn't believe that the, that scene with the, she went down into the tunnel and with the guy with the eyes, and he's just, I was like, don't eat the food. She's not going to eat the food. And then she ate the food.
Best Jeff Goldblum impression ever.
And it was like, after a few minutes, I'm like, God, how do I get away from Jeff Goldblum? Like, he's a really nice man, but I have no idea what to say to him. So we went on about our way. And my friend introduced me to this man. She's like, hey, you, and you guys see the punchline coming, so I'll make it short. But she said, hey, remember my friend I told you was an artist? well, this is my friend Drew. You should meet my friend Drew. He's a really talented artist. And I'm thinking, because you know, everyone in Hollywood is a talented artist, is an aspiring director, is an aspiring screenwriter, whatever. I'm thinking that this guy is just another hanger-on, you know? And so I'm talking to him, and he's a very nice man. He was an older guy, longer hair, beard, glasses, shorts, khaki shorts, and had a fanny pack on. He may have not had a fanny pack on, but in my memory, he had a fanny pack on.
I hope he didn't.
Fashionable.
I think he did. And we're talking as two human adults, and we're talking about the movie, and we had just seen Pan's Labyrinth. If you haven't seen Pan's Labyrinth, it's a fucking-tastic movie. And we're talking about it. You know, we're just relating to each other about what was good and what was bad. And I'm having this conversation. I probably had a conversation with him for 5, maybe 10 minutes. And it was great. It was great. I enjoyed talking to him. And then we left him and we went downstairs, and my friend wanted to wait for Frank. She was a friend of Frank Darabont. Mm-hmm. Another drop.
Walking Dead.
And right. And so we're waiting for him to get done talking to everyone else, and so we can chat with him. And as we start to chat with him, my friend says, Frank, John has a poster in his living room of Shawshank Redemption that you signed. And Frank goes, oh, my God, that's awesome. Where did you get this poster? And I said, well, I was at Dave's Laser. I love Dave's Laser. That was an awesome place. I'm like, yeah, it was a fucking awesome place. I'm sorry, it's gone. So we're talking, and he goes, shit. If I'd known, I have re-release posters in my trunk.
Wow.
I could have had Drew sign it.
Oh, my God.
And there's a moment of disconnect where I don't know what the fuck he's talking about, right? And my friend says, you know Drew. The guy I introduced you to.
Wow.
And Frank goes, yeah, Drew Struzan. Now, this is one of those moments in my life.
You shat your underwear?
No, it's like, I am both simultaneously bummed that I didn't know it was Drew Struzan, who has had such an impact on my life as a young man. Raiders of the Lost Ark, all the Indiana Jones, Star Wars, Goonies, Back to the Future. I could go on and on and on and on about the movies. But also, a moment where I kind of went, thank God I didn't know who he was.
Yeah,
because
right.
I would have
been a fanboy in front of
him. I would have been a blubbering idiot. Mm-hmm. I seriously don't know how I could have, like, I would have had nothing to say. I would have
been drooling, yeah.
Instead, we had a very adult conversation about a wonderful movie. So it was like, you know, I called Blaine right after I left there. I said, you're not going to believe this. But, I mean, I'm not a star-struck person at all. Mm-hmm. But I put him on a pedestal. He's a very freaking talented guy. And I love the fact that I had this conversation with him that didn't involve me being a complete, you know,
fanboy.
Fanboy, yeah. Right. You know, so that's my Drew Struzan story. It's a little bit of
I liked it. Yeah, awesome. That was good.
That's awesome.
It's worth the wait.
But, yeah. That's such a great story. Yeah, but it's, you know, I love the fact that they're bringing him back to do the poster. I mean, this is not officially announced, but it seems very like a done deal. The fact that they're bringing him back shows that there's, in this regard, it shows that there's a
well, it follows in the Lawrence Kasdan, you know, realm, the bringing the original cast,
right?
And
it's like a respect for the original,
yeah. Kenny Baker and Anthony Daniels, and
but for everything they do that's respectful for the original, I feel like there's another thing that's not, you know. For example, putting the movie out in December,
which I'm sorry, I have a huge problem with.
I have a huge problem with.
I mean that to me is the biggest slap in the face of the fans. And I would rather they put it off and like do it in 2016 and do it in May.
Well, what's the reasoning then?
That's when it's fitting into a schedule of blockbusters. I mean, mm-hmm. you know how you've got your summer
and
you've
winter.
Got your winter, and you've got your summer and winter is it
basically?
You know, and they're not ready for summer, mm-hmm. so they're going with winter. But the thing is that every other Star Wars movie has been in May. I mean, that's been
May 4th.
It's mm-hmm.
It's been the weekend typically after George Lucas's birthday.
Mm-hmm. The first one was May 25th, you know, and it's been like right around there, you know. I mean, they've moved it around a couple,
yep.
you know.
Yep.
I think actually the first couple were always May 25th,
yeah.
but then when they started doing Thursdays and, yep. you know, because it wasn't like that before. Like it came out on Friday, you know.
That is interesting that they're doing it in December.
It is.
Yeah. It's usually when it's the Oscar bait movies come out, yeah?
Right. It's weird.
Well, and especially for them to come up with a release date. I love the fact that you said that, because like in some cases that would lead someone to believe that they had something great. And they were like, well, let's make sure and get it in before the year ends. But not on this. Not on this. There's no way, you know. And I think that's a little bit of a fuck you to the fans to me.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, again, like you said, it's counterbalanced by Drew Struzan. It's counterbalanced by Lawrence Kasdan. It's you know, it's like, hey, we've listened to you. We recognize what the problems with the prequels were. And we're trying to make a better movie here. And, you know, I love the fact that something was leaked by a few weeks ago by J.J. Abrams. It was, the you know, when they first started shooting, it was a note to the cast about, hey, we want, the fans are counting on us. We need to make the best movie that we can make. I like that. I mean, it feels like there's a respect there. Whether that happens or not, you know, I mean, I have a hard time being pot committed to this.
It's hard. But again, I go back to the fence. Like, you know, we can bring up something and I can get excited talking about it. You know what I mean?
But do you think that they're doing it in December because it's a whole new post-Lucas era?
No, I think that they're doing it in December because they were not going to be ready for May.
The windows.
And so they moved it to December and they want to have a movie a year.
Yeah.
I think that I think it becomes a financial decision. Yeah. And that makes me
know,
feel.
Because they know.
Well, one of the positive things, though, to go back, I know you're a little bit, both of you guys are on the fence, but one of the things you brought up, John, was one of the positive things that JJ's not even just leaked, but put out on the internet is that maybe he's going a little bit more practical with the effects, which is a little bit old school.
Don't get me wrong. I love that idea. I love that the idea that they're going to be shooting, you know, in physical locations with practical effects and not, you know, eschewing some of the green screen stuff that was such a staple of the prequels and not in a good way.
Everybody says that. I'll believe when I see it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they said the same, you know,
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Indiana Jones, Ridley Scott, they all said the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it was going to be.
They said the same thing about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and then the first shot on the screen was a CG prairie dog.
Fucking
you know?
Prairie dog.
Yeah. And then a refrigerator and blowing up in the desert.
It's not, there's, I mean, you know, so you got to put your money where your mouth is. It's nice to see that they're in physical locations. It's nice to see that they have practical aliens. But again, I'm so reserved about committing my enthusiasm to this.
Yeah.
He has to win your trust with the first one, and then maybe you'll be enthusiastic about 8 and 9.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not to bring Star Trek too much into this, cause I feel like, you know, that's a topic that we've talked about doing at another time. But, you know, he won me over with the 2009 Star Trek.
And then
lost me with Into Darkness.
Yeah. That, it's funny because, like, every time I tell somebody that I'm on the fence about this, they're like, oh my God, dude, but Star Trek. And I go, dude, he's not infallible.
No. Yeah. Consistent. Yeah.
No. Look at
Lost.
Do not bring up Lost. All right. I'm tying
what
on
is
my...
wrong with you?
Playing the gloves. Let's put them on.
That's right.
I was going to ask you guys about that. The bigger thing with this is a guy who's been entrusted with two of the biggest space sci-fi franchises of all time ever.
Forever.
I mean, I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts on that, just from looking at it from a top-down view. I don't know.
You know what? My feeling on Star Trek versus Star Wars is very – it goes back to basics. Mm-hmm. Star Trek is sci-fi. Star Wars is fantasy.
Yeah. Okay.
And I feel like you're talking about two different genres. I know that they're the two biggest.
I'll take that a step further, though. I mean, Star Trek, I don't know if I can come up with a word that would make all of you happy. Like, Star Trek was sci-fi and, to me, it's brilliant. You know, it's mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars was
emotional. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I agree with you.
And, you know,
Star Trek is clean and technical. Star Wars is dark and gritty.
Yeah. Well, and
dirty and gritty.
It's more than dirty and gritty. It's affairs of the heart.
Like,
it's
yeah. I mean, like Star Wars taught me more as a kid about family and friends.
Well, it's talking about paradigms. You're talking about the hero journey. You're talking about, you know, you're talking about something that transcends. It's hard to do that in Star Trek.
I was thinking about it last week when we saw X-Men too.
Yeah.
It was like, I love when you know, a group of people in a movie and a director can get across
relationships.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I learned from Star Wars.
Right. Yeah, me too.
So, yeah.
We'll go off on this in another podcast, of course. But like Star Trek, you know, being brought up on the original series because my mom loved it. I never thought any of them were friends. They were just on a ship together.
Yeah,
you know, they weren't friends. Star Wars, when I was a kid, those were fucking friends.
The right. friendships yeah. really came about in the movies.
Yes, yeah. and that's where I was a fan. I was a fan in of the movies.
Yeah,
film universe.
But yeah. Gene Roddenberry had a very specific vision. And George Lucas had a very different vision, and his vision was much more about you know tapping into the hero myth, and yeah. you know, and that's there's a big difference between how is our science going to look, you know, X amount of years from now, and let's go back to the basics of
by the time what a hero by the is. Time that you're on Hoth,
yeah.
and Han Solo is looking for Luke Skywalker. I mean, you're 5 minutes into that film, yeah. and you're scared to death,
yeah.
I mean,
right, absolutely.
When does that happen now?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was scared as yeah. a kid.
No, I'm with you.
Well, and this is back to the original, probably stupid question. Is it? So are you happy, are you guys happy with this guy being in control of both of these epic universes?
Scared to death.
Yeah, I'm pretty frightened by it. He hasn't been consistent enough for me.
No.
You know, I mean,
I am a fan of his. I definitely am a fan of his.
It's interesting because I'm so hit and miss with J.J. Abrams that, you know, on the one hand, I go, all right, you did this fantastically. You did this wonderfully. You did this.
Like, I love Super 8.
See, I don't love Super 8.
I know you do.
That was a great movie.
See, I love it.
That was a great movie.
I love it.
We'll have to, I'm going to write that down for a future because I'm not a fan of Super 8. I'll tell you.
Well, we can bring that up in the.
It's not a rewatch film.
We can bring that up in the episode that shall not be named.
Does it begin with a V?
Yes, Voldalost.
A V? Voldalost.
Do not bring up Voldalost.
Lost-a-mort.
I like that one better.
All right, what else do we have for Star Wars?
We have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, cast.
Yeah. I think cast.
They announced the cast about...
Yeah,
there's so many ways we can go with this.
Yes,
they've announced the cast. Let's start very broad. What do you guys think about the names that they announced? Tracy,
I'm excited to see new people. There's a couple people that I've never seen them before. I still haven't seen Attack the Block, so I don't know much about John Boyega. Mm-hmm. I know nothing about Daisy Ridley.
Okay, you need to watch Attack the Block.
Yeah, you really
do.
No,
I just seriously. Saved it to my queue.
No, you need to watch it.
I know.
Not just save it.
It's
watch
a,
it.
It's a great, it's a really great little film.
I know. I need
it
to. Really I know. Of course, I love Andy Serkis, so I'm excited to see what role he's going to play. But of course, we don't know who Max von Sydow, but we don't know who these people's characters are going to be. On one hand, it's like I want to believe that maybe the guy from Girls, I can't think of his name right now. I don't watch
Adam...
Girls. Driver?
Yes.
Wow, I knew that.
Yeah, that's... well done.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And Daisy Ridley, like, part of me wants to think that maybe they're Jason and Jaina, but I heard that they're not doing anything with the expanded universe.
That's what I was going to say. Actually, I think that's a better question to begin
with. They've killed the expanded universe.
They've killed.
Okay. Yeah. So no Mara Jade.
Nope.
And this is crazy. This is actually kind of crazy. And I'm not an extended universe fan.
Me neither.
But
I still think it's crazy.
But I think it's crazy.
Yeah.
I think it's
only
nuts.
Only when it comes to the wives and the kids. That's where I would like them to maintain that, but the rest of it I don't care about.
Yeah, it's dead.
It's dead. Yeah, they're not doing it.
It's all of the expanded universe stuff is dead. They may pull characters from it. They may not.
If they want to.
Yeah.
No,
that's
one thing
weird.
None of it's considered canon anymore.
And I'm not a fan.
I know.
But
I still look at the people who've invested so much time and energy into that, and I go, wow, like, that sucks for you.
And
you
know what I mean? But there's been books based upon books based upon books.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. I can't think of a single franchise that's ever done this before.
The Star Trek universe has a bunch of stuff. It has a whole universe of books.
But it's all canon.
No, it's not.
Oh, I thought
no,
it was.
No, it's not. So I get that. I get.
Oh, okay.
I totally understand that. And I'm a huge Star Wars fan as well. And I'm not a huge fan of the EU, but... I do like the character of Mara Jade. I think that she's a really neat character, and I like that the kids aren't perfect.
For those who are listening who don't understand what the expanded universe is, encompasses everything outside of the films and the television shows that are sanctioned by Lucas. For example, that encompasses the books, the comic books, the role-playing games, the video games. Anything outside of the core canon has been considered – expand a universe. And what they've announced recently in light of the new Star Wars movies is that they've announced that all of the expanded universe stuff that people have been dwelling in and reading and investing in for years is no longer part of the canon. So
it's basically fan fiction.
It's basically right. Alternate universe stories, and it doesn't count.
Right. I don't mind that.
But it's easy to not mind that when you're not invested in it.
And how many people, how much of a percentage of the people who are originally in love with, you think so?
Yeah, I do. I think,
of 100% of the Star Wars fans, how many people are invested in the fan fiction outside of Star Wars?
You're talking about, when you talk about hardcore fans, a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, I'm talking about mass.
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. For the popular.
No, and here's the thing. Like, I mean, I consider myself a gigantic Star Wars fan, but I had a hard time with a lot of the extended universe. I did, but there are people who were there right there along with me who have gone in and are gigantic fans of it. And I think it's more than you think.
Well,
but is it the majority?
It's you know what?
I don't know about that.
I don't think it's a majority at all.
Yeah.
I think if you look at who
does Hollywood cater to?
No, I understand that, Hayden, but it's the difference between it's a trust thing.
I get you.
And you're talking about, again, people like Blaine and myself who are still on the fence, and we're not even expanded universe people. Can you imagine being one of those people who said, oh, right, Lucas said that this was canon for years, so I'm going to invest in it, and then having them come back and go, we lied. Not canon.
I thought he only ever said the movies were canon.
No, he did. He did say
the movies were trumped, but here's the thing. He also said that the movies ended at 6 and that the expanded universe were going to tell stories beyond what he was going to tell.
No, he went up to like 12.
No. He did. Remember when we were kids, we all knew about 9, 10, and 11.
Oh, I'm with you.
And he did say that all of the Zahn books. I remember when the Zahn books first came out. He said, "Hey, this is outside of the my own universe, but I am endorsing them.
Accepting of
So I mean, so he was very embracing of the extended universe.
And here's the challenge with that is that when he said, "Hey, there's only going to be 6 movies," and he did say that.
Well, he did that afterwards.
No, I understand, but he's revised his story many times.
Totally agreed. Yeah.
So when he finally said, "Hey, these 6 are the 6, and that's it," then it kind of gave people permission to tell stories beyond that,
and he did
And so. It's a little bit of a slap in the face for the people who've invested in that.
Again, agreed.
Didn't his biographer read all of the chapters and said that 7, 8, 9 were the most exciting ones? They were the ones that he liked the best.
I've never heard that.
I've never heard that before. I always heard that 4, 5, and 6. Well, I've always heard that especially if you listen to Lawrence Kasdan, that he wrote 1 and he wrote a backstory and an end story.
Yeah.
In notes. But that by the time they got to Empire Strikes Back, he had nothing, and that's why Lawrence Kasdan.
That's not true.
On the Star Wars news,
wasn't it?
No, that if you help me out with the name because I've had enough of our Carillion whiskey to be a little fuzzy on names.
I'll look it up.
What was the name of his co-producer on Star Wars and Empire?
Not Gary Kurtz, is it?
Yes, Gary Kurtz.
Gary Kurtz. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. If you listen to or read interviews with him. Mm-hmm. He talks about there being 12 chapters, and he talks about that.
Yes,
many things.
Yes, I remember that.
He talks about Luke Skywalker dying.
Right.
He talks about the Emperor not appearing until Episode 9.
No. Yes.
Right. So there was a very, very different vision, and the reason that he parted ways with Lucas was because of Raiders of the Lost Ark. When Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, Lucas got a mentality of good enough. It was summer fun. It was good enough. That's why they parted ways, because Lucas became about Ewoks. He became about merchandising. Right. He became about good enough.
Right. No, I know that. But also, like, if you the whole thing that Lawrence Kasdan said, which was one of the reasons why he wasn't involved in it anymore. Like, he was talking about how Darth Vader was never supposed to be Luke's father, and he was the one who came out and said that. Yeah, that was never part of the plan.
Right.
You know.
Well, definitely Leia was never supposed to be Luke's sister.
Never. Yeah, never.
Yeah, and Gary Kurtz, I mean, again, if you haven't, if you're a big Star Wars fan and you've never read an interview with Gary Kurtz, go Google Gary Kurtz right now.
Well, because, and Lawrence Kasdan.
Yeah, right. Because you will discover so much information.
And it sucks because as a you know, a third grader or whatever, like when we got the, there's going to be 9 of these things. We knew that when we were fucking little kids.
Well, it's 12.
Yeah.
At one point.
Wasn't it? Wow. Four?
I've never heard 12.
12?
I've
never 12 heard
12. I heard 12.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, the only characters that were supposed to be in every movie were
R2-D2 and C-3PO.
And Chewbacca. That's
R2-D2
what I heard.
I'm down with.
Yeah. Never even heard that.
I mean, again, we were kids, but that's what I heard.
It was always, for me, it was 9. And
that's, even then, you know, it's interesting if you go back and you look at interviews with Lucas, how much he's changed his story. It's I mean, and again, you cross reference that with Gary Kurtz and listen to what this is not a guy that was on the periphery. This is a guy that was on the inside.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And you listen to what he has to say about where Star Wars was supposed to go, and you go, that's a different sort of story than what we got in Return of the Jedi. So,
and ultimately, I'm happy with the.
So here we are.
Yeah,
here we are at Episode 7. And the original 3 are coming back.
That's what I was going to ask about. Yeah, it's that we talked about the new cast.
6.
Isn't it?
Sure. Chewy,
we've got absolutely. We've got Peter Mayhew coming back. We've got Anthony Daniels coming back.
Ford.
We've got Kenny Baker coming back.
Mark Hamill.
Harrison Ford.
So how important?
Carrie Fisher.
How important is that? That's my question. Is that these guys come back?
And the rumor, at least as of airtime, is that Harrison Ford is going to be a co-lead in this film. What does that mean to anyone? What is that? How do you feel about that? Because for me, I never needed to see them come back. Or if they came back, I would have. If you look at, you know, George Lucas has always professed that Star Wars is operatic with repeating motifs, right? And if you look at, okay, all right, we're going to be operatic. We're going to have repeating motifs. Then Mark Hamill needed to come back in the LB-1 role. And he needed to train new Jedi. But what the frick is Han Solo doing there? Who gives a shit about Han? I mean, look, this is someone who was like all about Han Solo when he was a kid, right? But what is he doing as a 70-year-old in Star Wars?
Marketing. Nostalgia.
Well, he's the one carrying the movie.
Why?
I know. I agree. I pity the audience because they haven't been around for me and John's discussions previous to this, but you know, the fact that the original audience or the original cast members are involved is another thing that scares the hell out of me, because it's not that we don't want to see them,
right?
We want to see them,
right?
But we think we want to see them as the people that we love,
right? And they're not going to be that.
But the thing is when they make them the people we love, we're going to be like, I didn't want to see that.
Right.
And that's what's scary about it.
What if it's a handoff, though? They're not going to be in the next two.
It's going to be a handoff, but it's going to be a handoff for the second movie.
Yeah. But even then, why is Han... I have a real heart... I mean, this is a rumor, I guess, at this point. But it seems to be a fairly firm rumor, is that Han Solo is the co-lead. And that doesn't make any sense story-wise to me.
Of course not.
You know, I mean, if you're talking about a movie that follows the...
Then it should be Luke Skywalker.
It should be Luke Skywalker. It should be Luke's progeny.
Harrison Ford. And that's just the way it is. You know, this whole movie should be based around Luke Skywalker.
Okay.
At least in the beginning.
Yeah, I agree with you. But the fact is that Harrison Ford is this marketable presence, right?
Yeah.
And he's got all this, the fan love. But really, he has such disdain for Star Wars, and always has. I mean, he's been very involved in Indiana Jones and how much better character Indiana Jones is than Han Solo. And here we're dealing with someone who doesn't really give a shit about this. I mean,
right.
Recently he was at a convention. I may be butchering this a little bit, but he was asked about, I believe, who shot first, which is, you know, a fandom question. And he said, I don't know, and I don't care. That's disheartening. And, you know, a recent
as
interview.
As a fan, especially.
Absolutely. Yeah. They had a recent interview with Tom Baker, who was the...
Fourth Doctor
in Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned, because Tom Baker's been very involved in fandom and very appreciative of his success you know, and very giving to the fandom community. And they asked him about this whole Harrison Ford quote. And Tom Baker, being British, was very polite and said that, well, that wasn't very... That
it's
wasn't
disappointing.
That's disappointing, wasn't that? That wasn't very generous, was it?
No.
And, but it wasn't. And why are we as fans so invested in this guy who doesn't give a shit about us?
But exactly. Harrison Ford did backtrack a little bit on an even more recent interview. He said that he was just really, really excited about coming back.
But don't you think that that's a very easy thing to say when you're making millions of dollars?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, Blaine, you've had a personal experience with Harrison Ford.
I have, yeah.
And it wasn't very positive.
Do tell.
No, yeah. and it's one of those things I hate talking about. You know?
Because it bums you out.
It's awful. My mom and I went to see, we're huge Jesus Christ Superstar fans. Yay. Like, we see the musical every time it comes around, and we don't care who's playing. So we went to a benefit that was held at the Ricardo Montalban Theater, and it was very hard to get into. I mean, literally, it was like, you know, 200-seater, you know, and it was a reimagining, so it was very modern. The sets were very modern. Jack Black was Herod. Most of the original cast was there, including Ted Neely.
Wow.
And my mom and I are in line at the bar to get drinks, and she looks over to me and says, "Oh my God, you're never gonna believe who's at the other end of the bar." I'm like, "Who?" She's like, "It's Harrison Ford." And behind the bartenders was a mirror. So I looked, and there was Harrison Ford getting drinks. And I said, I looked at my mom and I went, "I gotta do this. I gotta do this. You know, I mean, I gotta do this." Yeah. And so, fuck, sorry.
He's getting emotional, folks.
He is. Understandably.
So I ran around to the back of the line, and I waited for him to come out. And he came out, and he was holding a drink. He had a drink and a water in one hand. And he walked up, and I sat there and waited. And I was fucking done up. I get it. I looked like a weirdo. I had a fucking crazy-ass mohawk. I had, you know, 7-inch platforms. But he walked up to me, and I said, "Such a fan of your work. Thank you for changing my life." And I put my hand out. And he took the water and put it in his other hand and said, "Sorry, my hands are full." And took off. And it was so funny because these two guys behind me, like, I stood there like dumbfounded. And these two guys behind me were like, "Dude, you tried. You tried, man." And so I did what any heartbroken nerd would do at that point. And I ran to my mother and I called my best friend crying. And John talked me down. And the people in the seats in front of us were like, "How did you not know? He's the biggest asshole in Hollywood." And I was like, I didn't know, you know, but it's Han Solo. And so at that point, I stopped looking at the characters as having anything to do with him. It became Han Solo, and it became Indiana Jones, and there was Harrison Ford. There was a big joke. After this happened, we'd be on the Indiana Jones ride, and friends would be like, you know, when you see Indiana Jones at the end, they'd be like, "You're a dick." And I'd be like, "No, Indiana Jones is not a dick. Harrison Ford is not a, or Han Solo is not a dick. Harrison Ford is." Sorry.
No, it's, you know, it's something, it's a story that you've told, obviously I knew about, and I've told this story so many times because I feel like it means more than that. You know, I feel like it means more than that. To be a fan should mean more than that. You know, this is a guy who you look to, you know, as a role model in a way. And I know that's not fair for actors, but it's kind of hard not to do that.
You know, this is a topic. This may be another show that we talk about, but are these actors that we associate with these characters that we love, and when they do things in real life, or what, be it personal, or you read about it in the on the internet or the tabloids, is like, how do we disassociate with them, or you know, do we still connect with them, and does that ruin our experiences with those movies? You know, you, for me, one of the things, one of the, my favorite movies ever is Gladiator, and Russell Crowe, and that's one of his few epic movies ever. But I've heard he's a complete asshole. You know, you hear these stories where he throws phones at people or whatever, and it's like, how do you disassociate those types of things with whether it's a Harrison Ford or whoever it is that you look up to? Does that ruin your experience? And again, this could be a conversation for another podcast.
I had a very similar experience with William Shatner, and I just, at that point, I said, okay, that's it, because I had always heard the same thing, that he was a dick to the fans. He wrote that book and everything, and then he made the documentary Captains, and I thought that he had redeemed himself. I thought, okay, he realizes now how important the fans are. And then I was literally 2 feet away from him at a Star Trek themed night at Dodger Stadium. I was the only person in the entire place, sea of blue and white, and I was the only person in red. I was in my full Starfleet uniform. He was 2 feet away from me. He had seen me on the field. I made eye contact with him. He walked right by me and would refuse to even look at me. And I was literally like, they're like, like, please look at me. Like, please. Like, I just, you know, and he was just like very adamant, like, get me away from her. You know, and at that point I said, okay, love Captain Kirk, hate William Shatner. You have to disassociate with them.
But how sad is that? I mean, I
horribly depressing.
I listened to both of your stories and it fucking kills me, because it's like, you know, this is, it's one thing to become a fan of something when you're an adult, but when you become a fan of something when you're a child, you know, that's profound.
That and also, and not to, you know, not to toot my own horn, but also not to be a fanatic, you know, like I've never treated any, I mean, I grew up in LA, like I see stars all the fucking time. I'm used to it. You know, I don't care. Every now and then, you know, somebody blows my fucking mind and I just want to, and I never go up and say, you know, when they're with their family, or walk up to them when they're eating, you know, whatever. He was walking away from a bar.
Yeah.
You know?
When I grew up with a parental figure in the industry who taught me from the time I was 6 years old, these are normal people. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. They're normal people. The only people I've ever gotten starstruck about is Star Trek people.
Right.
So it was heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's I think that, you know, there's so much. It's hard because, you know, I understand they're just actors, and you know what, actors are
people.
Fucked up people.
Yeah, like the rest
of us, right? But
and they go through a lot. I
get it.
Yeah,
but man, that's tough. It's tough, and not to wrap this up on a downer note.
Because, I was just going to say, is there anything happy we can talk about?
Seriously. Deep.
But, you know, not to get too deep on the podcast, but, you know.
Yay, Star Wars! But,
look, I'm cautiously optimistic about this. And cautiously I want it to be fantastic, but I don't hold out hope that it's going to be.
I think it'll be entertaining.
Well, we'll see. Yeah.
So, midnight, that show?
Sure, why not?
Are we planning? Oh, was it a year or 2 years?
I mean, there's no way I'm not seeing that midnight. You know, or
I'll go with you with my lightsaber.
Me too.
Just so you know, Blaine and I have seen. We at least saw all the prequels at midnight.
Yeah,
and that was at a time
when
there were no reserve seating, so we were there for 10, 12, 15 hours beforehand.
Yeah. I saw it at George Lucas's theater in San Francisco.
Aren't you really too?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I lived there, but yeah.
Yeah, so you paid the demon himself.
Look, ultimately, we've got you know, episode 7, like it, love it, hate it. It's coming.
Star Wars?
Either way.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Isn't 7 a lucky number?
Seven,
I'm going to hold on to that.
Seven is coming.
Yay, Star Wars.
Yay.
Ba 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 ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba ba.
This has been an episode of Pod Thingy. Join us next time for more geekery and nerdism.
You know what I was doing? my Slave Leia photo shoot, I had my best friend from high school take the pictures because I was so, I wouldn't let anybody else see me in the costume. And we did it in her front yard, and every time a car would drive by, I would hit the deck. So there's all these pictures of me, like, on the ground that she kept taking pictures of because she thought it was hilarious that I was like, nobody can see me.
It is kind of hilarious.
And those pictures are in 3D, by the way.
There is one in 3D. Yeah. A fan made a 3D version, yeah.
Wow.
It comes four all double D's in 3D.
When you say double D's, I have to look at your boobs. It's like a guy thing, I think. I don't normally look at your boobs, but when you say double D's, I'm like, really?
I would agree that it's a guy thing.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, it's also a guy thing that most guys don't admit to.
Well, I admit
to it. And there we go.
That's on the table.
I look when she's not looking.
I look when you're looking, Tracy. I look when you're looking.
I just look.